A sudden call-up of so many senior military leaders is highly unusual. For Pacifica Radio, I'm Teresa Wierzbianska.
I'm Wiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, September 26, 2025. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Chicago to discuss community mobilization against ISIS presence in the Windy City and the continued demonization of the community by the Trump administration. And so today on the show, we're spending the hour with Hector Cervantes, who's a freelance writer based in Chicago, Illinois. His recent article in the Latino newsletter is entitled Community Mobilizes After ICE Actions Shake West Chicago. He joins us for the first time on the show from Chicago. Welcome to the show, Hector Cervantes.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So there's some moving parts here with regards to what's going on in Chicago. So there may be new developments between now and when the show airs. But before we discuss the issue of ICE, your recent article in the Latino newsletter mainly focuses on the community of West Chicago. So let's begin there. If you could tell us the difference between West Chicago and the greater Chicago area and why this community serves as a microcosm to the larger issues that you address in your article here.
Yeah, so West Chicago is a suburb of the greater Chicago area. It's located in New Peach County, about 30 miles west of the city. And last week on Monday, there was reports in the morning that ICE detained 15 people. And these are just some of the, West Chicago is just one of the many suburbs and communities in the Chicagoland area that are experiencing all these different ICE raids as a result of the Midway Blitz project. But yes, West Chicago is a predominantly Hispanic community, And that is one of the reasons why ICE is targeting West Chicago.
And I think for our audience here, mainly in Washington, the best way to make the comparison between West Chicago would probably be a Tacoma Park or a Langley Park here in the Washington, Maryland, Virginia area. So just to give that to the audience here, to give a greater understanding of what this community looks like in Chicago. Well, you sort of mentioned it already, but my next question was, what is Operation Midway Blitz? It sounds like something that you would hear in regards to a war in a foreign country, but no, this is specifically in regards to Chicago. So can you tell us what this is?
Yeah, so basically, federal authorities have begun a citywide immigration enforcement effort, and they called it Operation Midway Blitz, and it's basically targeting residents across Chicago and Illinois. This operation, it's expected to last over a month, is led by ICE and the Homeland Security Investigations.
Yeah, again, it just sounds so perverse considering that it's almost like they're declaring war on the Chicago area, a city of 2.7 million people at the very least. And on top of that, let's get to the issue then of ICE's presence in West Chicago, but not just West Chicago, but other communities similar to that of West Chicago surrounding the Chicago, the greater Chicago area. So for example, earlier this month, ICE agents shot and killed Silverio Villegas Gonzalez in nearby Franklin Park. And you could correct me if I'm wrong. One, Franklin Park seems to have the same demographics as that of West Chicago. And needless to say, this is a very chilling case considering that before he was shot and killed, he had actually just dropped off two of his kids to school before this incident happened. So what can you tell us about this and also about nearby Franklin Park as well?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, Franklin Park is a suburb that is closer to Chicago, maybe several miles away. And Franklin Park also has a lot of Hispanic people in that community. And that occurred last Friday. Not this past Friday, but the previous Friday. And when I saw that on the news, that was, it made national attention because we never really seen a story like this. I remember seeing it on CNN and it was covered in a lot of national outlets, but basically seeing that shocked the community on basically what ICE can do to people, regardless of citizenship status or not. So when I read that, I was just kind of just shocked and just, it's just crazy how this can happen so close to home and you never know. You'll never know when ICE is present, and anything like that is just really tragic. It's just a tragic thing, and it shook the whole community of Chicago and sparked a lot of national attention.
Yeah, and that's a good point to make as to how ICE will pop up in places that you would least expect it. So, for example, this wasn't mentioned in your article, but this certainly came to mind as I read your report, is that ICE officials even made their way, I believe, to the Puerto Rican Museum in Chicago, I think about a month or two right now. And look, it's kind of weird to say this, but we have to remind the audience that, hey, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. Why ICE would go to the Puerto Rican Museum in Chicago? I mean, the underlying thing here is racism and xenophobia. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because, again, this is one of the first things that popped up in my mind as I read your article.
Yeah, so this did happen. This was in the summer, I believe June or July of this past summer. I forgot the date, the specific date. But basically, as you mentioned, Puerto Ricans are citizens of the United States. And when I read the story and saw what happened, basically these agents were like, hey, can we use the bathroom? And it's now being shown that this was seen as racially profiled. Obviously, Puerto Ricans are citizens. I feel like they were just trying to see, like, I just felt like they were just trying to see the response of going to a public place like this. And I just feel like they could have strategized potentially, be like, they're not really, generally speaking, a lot of, if you go to a public place, it's not generally well received in Chicago, especially since it's a sanctuary city. And basically, what I think is, ICE is targeting people on the streets because it is not it's a public place, but it's not, they don't have rules, if that makes any sense or whatnot. But basically, it's just crazy. It's just really sad to see how ICE is targeting a specific community. And we've seen it over and over again.
Yeah. And look, forgive me here, but I'm sort of a geography nerd. And upon looking at West Chicago, it caught my attention, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but there is an airfield or nearby airport in the West Chicago area. And the reason I bring this up to you is because earlier this year, actually did a show on the issue of immigration in nearby Indiana. And in nearby Gary, Indiana, and East Chicago, which is actually in Indiana, the international airport in Gary has been one of the main points of deporting migrants for the state of Indiana. And so is that the same thing happening over in West Chicago? I don't know. But also, I believe there's certainly the case that could be made that there was some protests also further north of the Chicago area in the Great Lakes, if you could correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, that is where the ICE agents are stationed at the Great Lakes Naval Base. But yes, to answer your question, Christy Gnomes came to Elgin, Illinois, and did an ICE raid earlier last week. And there is post on social media that she actually flew in from the West Chicago airport. I forgot the name, the DuPage airport.
Yes.
There was reports that, I'm not for sure if that's true or not. I saw it on social media, but it definitely adds up, especially if Christy Gnomes was actually in Elgin. And actually, there's a story how a citizen was detained.
Yeah, and this also lends itself to headlines over the weekend where 10 people were arrested for anti-ICE protests in Chicago. And I believe this was, as you mentioned earlier, in response to Operation Midway Blitz. And actually, yeah, I have the article in front of me that this was in response to the facility in Great Lakes further up north of Chicago, correct?
I know for sure that the protests at the Broadview ICE Processing Center have intensified with clashes between the demonstrators and federal agents. I know families of detainees report uncertainty about transfers to other states and poor conditions at this facility, including overcrowding and long hours in restraints. But I do know on Friday, there was a report of tear gas being thrown at some of the protesters and local news. I remember seeing CBS 2 Chicago. They were alive. Yes. And the news crews even had to take a break for a little because there was a lot of toxic. There was just a lot of chaos, and they had to be safe when reporting the news. But yes, to answer the question, the Chicago area experienced increased federal immigration operations with about 300 agents using North Chicago's Naval Station Great Lakes as their hub. And the Trump administration said the goal is to remove dangerous criminals from the street, though the enforcement surge has sparked tension across communities.
And correct me if I'm wrong, in your article, you said upwards between 50 to 70% of the population of the community in West Chicago are mostly Latino. And again, you know the area better than I do. Can the same be said of both Broadview and nearby Franklin Park, where the murder of the young man that I mentioned earlier took place, correct?
Yes, I believe so. It says the Broadview Hispanic population percentage varies depending on the data source, but it's around 15 to 21% for Broadview, Illinois. Yes, but I know Franklin Park, I know there's more of a presence of Hispanics in Franklin Park. I just don't know the key stats.
But at the very least, we're sort of recognizing a pattern here as to which specific communities are being targeted. And sort of almost, they're almost all on the same route heading from West Chicago to the greater downtown Chicago area, correct?
Yes.
So speaking of ICE agents, also this month, ICE agents reportedly abducted William Jimenez, a day laborer who is currently suing off-duty Chicago police officers working as security for a Home Depot for abusing migrant day laborers. Can you give us your thoughts and some other details with regards to this particular case? Because again, we're putting this all together, this sort of frame of reference now that sort of leads us to the very obvious. And it's something that we've seen here in Washington and what we reported on here on the show in Los Angeles is this systemic racism and xenophobia all under the guise of law enforcement.
So I've seen a lot of ICE targeting a lot of the workplaces. And I just think that it's just sad to this point where you have to go to a workplace just to get just to try and round up people. And it's really sad. It's not about the criminals any. It has never about the criminals. It's honestly just racial profiling. And as I mentioned, or with the Supreme Court's decision on ICE agents now being able to racially profile people, it just opens the floodgates for more of these types of occurrences to happen. And it's really intense and sad. And I feel like people are still not understanding how big of an issue this is.
And in doing so, in your article, you spoke with some community activists who have spoken out in response to actions by ICE in West Chicago and in other neighborhoods in Chicago as well. What has been the response from community organizers on both the increasing presence of ICE in the greater Chicago area and a possible deployment of the National Guard, similar to what we saw in Los Angeles and here in Washington as well? So for the moment, Chicago seems to be on the outside looking in with the issue of the National Guard. But again, what are your thoughts here and what has been the response by community organizers?
Yes. So I'm going to first focus on the deployment of the National Guard, and then I'm going to discuss more about ICE's presence in West Chicago and the key information that we have gathered so far. So basically, Trump has called out to deploy the National Guard to Chicago. He said it many times before. There was a post he made on Truth Social, an AI-generated photo of him saying, the AI-generated photo he posted is coming to Chicago and you see the skyline, and which is, when I first saw that, I was like, it's sad to joke about it, but to have the U.S. president just do this when you're supposed to be uplifting community members or uplifting the country, and instead of dividing and just saying, hey, we're going to take over Chicago, what next? But basically, he saw the response, how Chicago mobilized really quickly as a whole to not bring in the National Guard and whatnot. He saw that Chicago mobilized really quickly, and he later said that he's not planning on sending the National Guard, but is going to do it to Memphis instead. But then he changed his statement. So it's really up in the air. So it's very crazy to just really, you never know what to believe. One day you hear one thing and the next day you hear another thing. So it's putting people on edge, and it's just really terrible to see what's going on. And I can talk more about ICE's presence in West Chicago. So I reported that on September, but it's the 22nd. So that was a week ago, on September 15th. So basically on September 15th, I woke up to, I live in Chicago, but I actually grew up, I went to middle school and high school in West Chicago, Illinois. And I saw a lot of, some of my friends posted on social media saying, oh my gosh, ICE is here. And one of my friends messaged me, ICE is here. And ICE is in West Chicago. And the people that were detained did it early in the morning. The ICE detained a lot of people in the morning. And there was videos of it going on social media. And basically, I saw a video of the senator, Karina Villa. Karina Villa is a lifelong resident of West Chicago. And she's the Illinois state senator. And she's a lifelong resident of the 25th district and was elected to the Senate in 2020. She did a video. What happened was she received a call from my story that I reported, from what I found out. She received a call saying there were ICE agents, and she followed, there were ICE agents parked at the police department. And she verified that it was true. She followed the ICE agents to the police department. She followed the agents where they started detaining people, and she started yelling. It was captured on video, but she started basically yelling on the block saying, don't come outside, ICE is here, know your rights and whatnot. There is footage of ICE going into the car, and I'm not for sure how many people they detained in that instance, but I believe they did detain someone. And basically, I saw this in the morning. I'm like 30 miles, I'm in Chicago, and I saw that, and I was like, I should really do some reporting for this because it's a local story. And basically, it was around 10:30 when I, more like 11 when I saw this, or not when I saw this. It was more like around 10:30, 10:45. I just had an instinct to just instead of taking the train to West Chicago, because the Chicago and West Chicago are connected by the Metra, I decided to take an Uber there to see what was going on. Going into this, I wasn't for sure, is ICE going to be targeting people all day? This was the first day ICE was found in West Chicago, Illinois. So I wasn't for sure what to expect. I brought my passport just to be safe.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure if there were going to be any other ICE raids. So I basically went to the community and I was on the news. I was looking at what the community's response was on social media. And there was a protest outside of a factory called Gelser. And there was reports that ICE was outside of Gelser in the morning as well. It's a factory where a lot of people work in the community. And basically with that, I reported on the protest. There is, I would say, I was there for a good hour and a half getting some quotes, documenting some what was going on. And it was nice to see the community just in general mobilize. And what started as a protest of about like 30 people ended up with around 45 people. And basically Karina Villa held a press conference in the community at somewhere around like 2:30 or 3. And luckily I was able to go out and document the second half of the press conference. And since I am my mom and stepdad, they live in West Chicago, they were a really big help. They told me like, hey, there's a press conference. You want me to pick you up from the protest? So I really like to thank my mom as well for driving. But it was nice at the protest to see all of the community members come together. I know there was a lady who was giving sandwiches away to the community. And there was people who brought posters, and obviously West Chicago is just one of the many communities that are being affected. And throughout this week, I was able to hear more updates. I know the mayor, Daniel Bovey, on Thursday spoke about all of the updates. He provided a good 40-minute video. The mayor of West Chicago is Daniel Bovey.
Okay.
And he made a big video. He made a video describing what happened and how the community can mobilize.
I had completely forgotten about that Twitter post that the Trump administration put out there with regards to Chicago. And I just want to point out that it is so profoundly juvenile and infantile for a government Twitter account to post something like that. And it's not meant to be funny at all. I mean, it's basically the threat of violence by the government on the city of Chicago. And even if that wasn't posted, I mean, it's very clear right now with the case that I mentioned earlier of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez that, no, this is not funny at all whatsoever. That may have been the intention, but clearly for the community who's been in fear, as you mentioned before, this is not a joke at all. And this is even before the National Guard even shows up to the Chicago area. So going back to Senator Karina Villa that you mentioned, you did put a link of that video, as you mentioned, in your article. And it is a pretty intense confrontation between her and ICE agents. And she's also been sort of front and center for both English and Spanish speaking media with regards to her outrage and the public's outrage towards ICE's presence in these small communities.
This is my city, that's right. Take off your mask.
A report very early on that there was going to be hundreds of ICE agents in DuPage County, Illinois. I really needed to get the information out to constituents so they would be aware of what was happening. ICE agents were parked right on the corner where I was at. So the first thing I decided to do was just to start running. So I started running and yelling at folks, stay in your houses, ICE is here, ICE is here. I run up to the scene and I just went right up to that window and I started telling these agents to take off their masks, and I started telling them that this was my city and that they needed to get out. So I just turned and started speaking to the camera, and you hear my voice. It goes from this like anger to this concern for the community. And so I can't even finish watching it because it just gets me so choked up still. And at that point, someone rolls up the street, rolls down the window, and they say, are you okay? Do you need anything? Please, I don't recommend anyone ever do this, okay? Don't ever do this. I get in the seat, I sit down, I put on my seatbelt, and I say, go after those ICE agents, follow those cars. Literally, we start driving away. And I'm like, I had this like adrenaline rush, and I'm like, follow them, they're right there, stay on them. And then I'm like, I should look to see whose car I'm in. And I like turned to look, and it happened to be a teacher that I used to work with, who's one of my good friends. She's still a teacher in West Chicago. I just wanted to go out and protect all the kids and their families. It was not something that I thought about. It was my gut reaction. Like, these are my kids, this is my community, and I need to get there and I need to tell these folks. I want to see them face to face and tell them that they need to get out.
I'm curious to know what your assessment is on Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson on both the issues of immigration and sanctuary cities. And the reason I asked you this before you answered is the following, that here in Washington, we have the National Guard here. And I would have to say that Mayor Muriel Bowser has done a pretty poor job in confronting the Trump administration. It seems to me like she's sort of hedging her bets because she has publicly said things against the Trump administration's actions, yet at the same time is extending the presence of the National Guard here in Washington. This is why I'm saying it's almost like she's hedging her bets here. But the only thing I'll say in fairness to Mayor Bowser here in Washington is that Washington, D.C. does not have the same state rights as that of Chicago. And so with that said, I'm curious to know, what is your assessment on Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson on both the issues of immigration and sanctuary cities here?
Mayor Brandon Johnson is defending the sanctuary city policy. And basically, Mayor Brandon Johnson said the city received no prior notice and expressed concerns over potential militarized enforcement that could violate due process and residents' constitutional rights. And I know he stressed that Chicago and Cook County and Illinois have sanctuary laws, so local police won't assist ICE unless there is a criminal warrant. And I know basically he also did, it was also reported that he signed an executive order directing local police to protect protesters' constitutional rights, even if federal authorities try to restrict some protests. And it's called the Right to Protest Order. And it comes as Trump continues promoting the plan to possibly send federal personnel to Chicago. And basically, Mayor Brandon Johnson is defending his sanctuary policy despite what's going on. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why Trump is targeting Chicago, because Chicago has been adamant as we are always a sanctuary city.
Precisely. And this may be an hour-long conversation in and of itself. The targeting of cities with black mayors, we see that in Los Angeles, here in Washington, Chicago now, and maybe Memphis, Tennessee, maybe the next one down the line. He's also mentioned Baltimore and Oakland. All these cities have black mayors, and there's no ambiguity whatsoever with regards to targeting these cities, with regards to using the National Guard and ICE as well, because right now as it stands, as far as the Latino community is concerned, the National Guard and ICE seem to be one and the same. But again, that's an hour-long conversation in and of itself. So with that said, we're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Hector Cervantes, who's a freelance writer based in Chicago. His recent article for a Latino newsletter is entitled Community Mobilizes After ICE Actions Shake West Chicago. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Occupied Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just wanna be free.
That was Chicago, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Occupied Washington. Reminding everyone, you can also follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're speaking about ICE's presence in Chicago with Hector Cervantes, who's a freelance writer based in Chicago, Illinois. His recent article in the Latino newsletter is entitled "Community Mobilizes After ICE Actions Shake West Chicago." So, Hector, I don't know about you, but we are in the middle of Hispanic Heritage Month. And even before that, months ago, there have been at least two or three Latino-oriented festivals here in the D.C. area alone that were either postponed or canceled altogether because of the increased presence of ICE in these communities. And so over in Chicago, do you feel any sort of festivities have been muted or just depressed this past year alone?
Yes, yes. I was going to say, I know community events like El Grito Chicago were canceled due to ICE activity, though neighborhood celebrations continued. I know there was the parade that happened in the Little Village neighborhood. Little Village's Mexican Independence Day parade still happened, although there were some safety protocols in place. But generally speaking, around this week, with Mexican Independence Day that just passed, you would typically see in Chicago lots of cars or trucks proudly voicing their Mexican heritage. You'd see flags, you'd hear music. People from the suburbs would come to downtown. You really didn't see that at all this year. I mean, you saw some, but not as how it used to be a year or two ago. I remember the city had to cancel the street, or it got so crowded in the years prior with a lot of the car caravans that people couldn't even go in the city. And there was reports how there was gridlocks for local members, and you didn't really see that this year. So El Grito Festival was canceled. That is the large scale celebration that happens at Grant Park. I was there last year, but due to safety concerns, they decided to cancel that. But also in my reporting in West Chicago, the day after that story came out, there is also on Tuesday, September 16th, there was also a little celebration it was a celebration and a protest as well to amplify the community that despite ICE being present, there is still celebration, but you do see suppression in celebration from prior years.
It's really sad. Generally speaking, objectively speaking, it's just sad that everything has been muted and that people have to guard or even hide their identities with regards to their roots and their upbringing at this time, not just in Chicago, but throughout the country. It's just profoundly sad, these times that we're living in. But at the same time, as a journalist, I think you and I have the recognition that we're living through history right now, however sad and depressing it may be. And so we have to address it and report on it as such. And so in addition to writing this article, you also took pictures of both Karina Villa's press conference and even local activists who joined in. What challenges have you faced as a journalist in talking to people who are more guarded than ever in protecting their identities? I can't tell you how many video reports I've seen from both Univision and Telemundo of people who don't want to give out their names, who don't want their faces to be shown, who even want their voices distorted because of the fear of one thing and one thing only, and that's ICE under the guise of this current administration.
Yeah, so basically, I can provide an example. So I was at the protest outside of Gelsert, and there was a person who was handing out Know Your Rights cards. And I asked the person if I can quote her in my article and just talk about, like how does it feel to be handing out these cards and knowing your rights? And why is it important forever? And the person that I spoke with was like, oh, I don't want to disclose that due to fear of the organization being targeted. So I didn't end up making it in the article, but there was someone I was going to put a blurb saying how there was a person from a local nonprofit that was handing out Know Your Rights cards. And that's really sad to say that people are being suppressed without even knowing what their rights are. But basically, I know we're going to get into this a little bit, but I was a reporting fellow for City Bureau for this past, for their spring fellowship. It was a 4-month long fellowship. But basically, City Bureau is a nonprofit newsroom in Chicago that equips every community with the tool it needs to eliminate information inequity, to further liberation, justice, and self-determination. And my reporting fellowship ended a month ago. But City Bureau provided a resource guide on how to help and protect your community amid ICE raids in Chicago. And they did a great good series on like what was going on and like what people can do to, in terms of what residents can do, knowing your rights and what city and school protections are available.
And again, even that, as you just mentioned, is sad by itself, that people, even though you and I are Latinos, obviously, and we could speak the language, people are still guarded nonetheless. Even if we have Univision or Telemundo on our badge, people are still guarded and protective of their identity and their very existence as well. It's almost like a social death to a certain degree. And the other thing that bothers me here is that the school year just started as well. And so children of migrants are also living in fear, if not fear for themselves, then certainly for their parents, the future of their parents. And I'm curious to know if you take that under consideration when you wrote this article as well, that the fear and trepidation of the children of migrants during this time, because like I said before, the aforementioned case of the man who was shot and killed by ICE agents in Chicago, this only happened after he had dropped off two of his kids. If his kids were in the car, who knows what could have happened. But again, children, whether they're U.S. citizens or not, are unfortunately in the crosshairs of ICE agents at the moment.
Yeah, so basically what West Chicago did when I did reporting on that on Monday was they entered a soft lockdown. So basically the parents of the students could have picked up their children during the day, but the students were not allowed to go outside for recess. Everything had to be indoors. But basically, it's just really sad to see how children are going to be affected by this. And obviously, they're children, so they don't know what everything is, what's going on right now, like how things are going. But children are being exposed to this. And this potentially, basically, this potentially has a problem. This can be a problem with children not wanting to go to school, children fearing, like especially if there's a family of immigrants that the parents don't even want to drive due to fear of these ICE raids. How are they going to get to school? And I've seen West Chicago mobilize with my reporting. Throughout the week, I've seen people post on social media saying, hey, if anyone is in fear of, if anyone doesn't work, if anyone needs anything, I'm able to pick up groceries to help, or I'm able to do some drop off for the kids or whatnot. But basically, this community has mobilized, and it's just basically sad to see how the children are at the crosshairs of this. They are seeing it through the news, and they are just, a lot of questioning is going on. I know, I'm pretty sure there were children saying, hey, why can't we go outside today? And they're used to going outside for recess. It's the fall in Chicago, like late summer, fall, and the weather's still warm out. And it's just really sad to see them on soft lockdown.
Yeah. And this is one of those things where we can't put the long-term effects of this on a pie chart or on graphs. This is an unspoken thing where we don't know to what degree this sort of trauma will have on the children, the American children of migrants, 5, 10, 20 years down the road. It's an intangible thing that we cannot predict, but it's certainly not helpful either in any way, shape, or form. Now, in addition to this article, earlier this year, you wrote an article for a Latino newsletter, a second article, this time about the Sueños Festival in Chicago's Grand Park earlier this year. Considering the harsh political climate towards immigrants and people of color in general, do you even see like another Sueños Festival type event in Chicago next year? I mean, like you said earlier, there are festivals still taking place in spite of everything that's going on. But from what I've seen here in Washington, there are similar Latino-oriented festivals here. that have felt a little depressed, quite muted, and people being quite guarded as to looking over their shoulder, basically. And so it may seem like a cynical thing to ask, but we are living in cynical times, so it has to be asked whether or not we could see these things or whether we're about to see a downturn on these sort of things.
Yeah, so when those happens, it's always the Memorial Day weekend in Chicago. It's I believe it's their fourth year doing this festival. It's relatively new. It's their fourth year, I believe. And this was Memorial Day weekend. And I was just, at this time, I was just a little, obviously concerned, but like we heard about, obviously we know that this was like 5 months into the Trump administration and his disliking the whole Latino community as a whole. When I did reporting, I saw a lot of people had pride, but something new that I could add is people like what's going on with the Latino community as a whole is an eye opener to what people are spending their money on. Like, for example, I live in Chicago, so I'm familiar with the entertainment going on. But basically, Sam Sanchez is lobbying right now in Washington, D.C. to stop the crackdown of these deportations. So Sam Sanchez is basically, he's basically a business owner who owns several venues in Chicago. I know Moe's Cantina, there's one in River North neighborhood in Chicago, one at Wrigleyville. That is a Latino bar and nightlife. And he owns in my neighborhood. I live in Wrigleyville. He also owns Old Crow. But basically, Sam Sanchez is getting under scrutiny because he actively supported Donald Trump and voted for
him. Really?
Yes, yes. And Block Club Chicago did an article about that. And people online are just saying, I'm just seeing a lot of people online saying, oh, I'm boycotting this or I'm boycotting that. Or there's also a thing that he does. He's also part of a group called V5 Chicago. And basically V5 promotes all of these events that are going on for the Latino community. They promote a lot of the nightlife and things to do for fun or things to do. There's a big series called Cafeton in Chicago, where it's basically people show up instead of listening to reggaeton at the night or late night, it's during the day, like 10 or 11 a.m. But basically on social media, people have read the Block Club Chicago article about Sam Sanchez and how he actively supports Donald Trump and is lobbying to Congress to not have any more deportations because it's affecting his businesses. That's what people were saying. Like the fear of a person who might be working at these establishments. It's causing a lot of things to spiral out of control. And he's out in D.C. He was out in D.C. And basically, people are now seeing on social media, like they're basically talking on social media like, oh, I don't support this anymore, or let's do something else because he actively supports Trump. Like for that, an example, like those coffee shop things that he does, it could be, I hate to say this, but it could be a potential ICE raid. Like people are just in fear if this man voted for Donald Trump. Like he could also be, hey, I'm going to send the ICE up. There's a lot of people partying here, you know.
Man.
But it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's also a form of self-preservation as well, to a large degree. I mean, again, these are the sad, cynical times that we're living in right now, that somebody like that would have such a central role in the Latino community over in Chicago. So I don't want this conversation to be entirely doom and gloom. And so in your article, I do want to take a moment here to put the spotlight on both the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, which you mentioned in your article. And you also mentioned another organization here, We Go Together for Kids, a collaborative initiative in West Chicago that unites community partners to support families with children from birth through high school. And so you know the area better than I do. Are there other organizations that are trying to fight the good fight that deserve our attention here in this conversation?
Yes, basically, in my article, I'm going to talk about West Chicago and then Chicago as a whole. But so in the video that the mayor put out this past Thursday, there's a lot of key partners and organizations and people who work who are trying to protect the community. So the mayor discussed how the West Chicago Police Department is not involved in ICE enforcements unless a judicial warrant exists for a legitimate criminal. And the police department focuses on protecting residents from crime, investigated local offenses, and provided images of badges and vehicles to help residents distinguish police from ICE agents. And the school district 33, which in West Chicago, Illinois, that is for the elementary school and middle schools, and district 94, which serves the high school, helps manage disruptions in schools as attendance dropped due to fear of ICE raids. And Senator Karina Villa and representatives, I might butcher their name, Hershar and Ramirez assisted in connecting families to resources and distributing Know Your Rights cards. And DuPage County, where West Chicago is at, it's supporting logistical and social efforts to aid affected families, and community and faith-based organizations like Desperte Latino, Casa Michoacan, local churches, and the EduCare program mobilized to provide emotional support, guidance, and assistance. And the Family Support Hotline, which is 855-435-7693, was set up to verify rumors, provide accurate information on ICE activity, and help families locate detained loved ones. So that was what was discussed in the video. And I know in Pilsen, in the Pilsen community in Chicago, which is, there's a lot of Latinos in the Pilsen neighborhood as well. Locals were, there was an article in Block Club Chicago that was posted where locals were giving out whistles to train people to know when ICE is here, when they would blow the whistles. And I saw this.
Really?
Yes, yes. And I saw this movement went into West Chicago as well. I know there's a group chat that the community is doing for supporting each other, just saying, hey, I'm out on the road. I'm going to see if there's ICE here. Just patrolling and seeing like what they are seeing and just trying to warn the community as a whole.
It's interesting that we've gone this far into the conversation and only now mention the historic significance of Pilsen, the Pilsen neighborhood in Chicago. And it certainly has a very rich history with regards to both the Mexican community and the Puerto Rican community over generations with regards to Chicago. And keep in mind, you know, these two communities have also lived side by side with communities that came from Eastern Europe as well, in addition to Italian migrant communities. This is a century and a half of Chicago history that has built the city into one of the most beautiful cities in the country. I'll tell you right now that I have a bias in this conversation because Chicago has and still is one of the cities that I have on my bucket list of places that I want to visit because of its history, because of its beauty, because of its people. And right now it's being clouded by this administration who only paints it and gives people the perception that it's crime-ridden and that it's falling apart, much in the same way as it did in Los Angeles and much in the same way that it's doing it here in my hometown of Washington, D.C. So we have about 4 minutes left, Hector. Are there any other lessons or what do you hope people learn from your article, especially as this administration's hostilities towards the city of Chicago continue? What else do you hope people learn from your reporting here?
Yes, really good question. I just really hope people learn that this is just one of the many communities that is being targeted and how there's lives being at stake. And despite the gloominess of what is going on, communities are mobilizing and people are getting together and are finding out what are some ways I can help my community. And I want to stress how with the reporting that I've done, it really shows how a community in a span of less than 24 hours can really come together and mobilize for justice. And despite the gloominess and despite all of the horrible things going on with the Latino community, there are people still not afraid to show where they come from and are bold about it. And as a community, it's essential to come together and basically help and create a system of trust. And I know with social media, the mayor also mentioned how there could be a lot of misinformation being spread. It's really essential to verify from a trusted source what is going on. I also want to stress how the first day of when I did reporting, the first day when ICE was present, there was also false social media reports going on. ICE is here, ICE is there, or now what I hope from my reporting is people are actually using credible and verifiable sources. And when they see ICE, they are actually documenting and narrating as they go along. Like, here is ICE, ICE is here, or just in general, being as specific as possible because lives could be at stake.
The community of West Chicago has a population of at least 25,000. But we've always said here on the show that there is no movement for social justice too small that it doesn't deserve our attention. West Chicago serves right now as a microcosm towards the greater Chicago area when it comes to this administration's hostilities towards immigrants and people of color. And by extension, it serves as a microcosm to the attacks on immigrants and people of color nationwide, which is why we're going to create a link on our Twitter account to this article. But in the meantime, we've been speaking with Hector Cervantes, who's a freelance writer based in Chicago, Illinois. His recent article in the Latino newsletter is entitled "Community Mobilizes After ICE Actions Shake West Chicago." So thank you very much, Hector Cervantes, for being on the show with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You got it. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone to go follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. That is at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Asada Shakur died today in Havana, Cuba. She was 78. Cuba's Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced her death, citing only health conditions and advanced age. Shakur was a legendary figure within the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army. She was convicted in the 1973 killing of a New Jersey state trooper during a shootout that left one of her fellow activists dead. She was shot twice by police during the incident. In 1979, she managed to escape from jail and later fled to Cuba, where she received political asylum. She long proclaimed her innocence. In her autobiography, Asada Shakur wrote, quote, "It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love each other and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains." Close quote. Rest in peace and power, Asada Shakur. In more news, a federal grand jury yesterday indicted former FBI Director James Comey on one count of making a false statement and one count of obstruction of congressional proceedings in relation to the testimony he gave to the Senate Judiciary Committee in 2020. The move was quick to draw criticism that this is Donald Trump bending the judicial system to his will to punish his political enemies. Representative Jamie Raskin, ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, said the charges against Comey show that Trump, quote, refuses to allow the facts of the law to stand in the way of his wrath and vengeance campaign, close quote. Comey was indicted just days after President Trump publicly said that U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi should prosecute him and two other political adversaries. And after President Trump and President Zelensky spoke before the entire UN this week, Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu took the podium today to a rather hostile room. WPFW's Noah Portner has more.
Today, Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel and proponent of the ongoing Gaza war, spoke in front of the entire UN General Assembly. Well, entire wouldn't be entirely accurate. As he approached the podium, scores of delegates from across the world filed out of the room. Netanyahu then opened the speech by denouncing Iran, painting it as an existential threat to Israel and other nations, and linking Iran to Hamas, Syria, Yemen, and Hezbollah. He then went on to proudly describe how Israel eliminated these threats one by one with the help of President Trump. He then urged continued vigilance, warning that the job is yet to be finished. Netanyahu tried the rather unusual rhetorical strategy of offering a pop quiz to the UN. The answers were blindingly obvious. Here he is now.
Our enemies are your enemies. So let's do something else, so first at the UN. Let's do a pop quiz. And raise your hand if you know the answer. Here's the first question. Who shouts death to America? Is it A, Iran? B, Hamas? C, Hezbollah? D, the Houthis? Or E, all of the above? All of the above.
That was Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, tying his current war in Gaza, which has killed over 65,000 Palestinians, to the larger threat of extremism. His speech was broadcast over loudspeaker and via phones into Gaza.